You are listening to a show on the Radio Nostalgia Network, which is also a member of the new Blueberry Network at blueberry.com. That is BLUBRRY.com.
Hi, old-time radio lovers. This is Bob Camerdell for the Radio Nostalgia Network, reminding you that these great programs are totally listener-supported. So please continue to do your part with a once-in-a-while donation of a buck or two, the cost of a soda. Stop by the network homepage, radiomemories.libsyn.com. Look for the PayPal donation link on the left side of the screen. It's quick, easy, and secure. Or you can contact the big boss himself, Mr. Dennis Humphrey, radiomemories@gmail.com.
Thank you, Bob. This is what we don't want to hear in the future if we don't have donations to be able to keep up the bandwidth.
This podcast is on the air because of support by listeners like you. Because of the show's increasing popularity, it's actually reached its bandwidth allowance for this month. So please visit the producer's podcast page and make a small donation so that you can continue to enjoy this great podcast on a regular basis.
And now to our featured presentation.
Hi, everybody. I'm Walt Hughes, and welcome to Thanks for the Memories. Here's Jack Armstrong from December 11th, 1940.
Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy.
Wave the Piper Hudson high, boys. Show them how we stand. Ever shall TV champions, known throughout the land.
Wheaties, breakfast of champions, bring you the thrilling adventures of Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy. Say, I'd like to have you hear some of the highlights in the sports announcer's year. For instance, in the spring and summer, you'll hear him on the air almost every day saying something like this.
Start hit ball. There it goes, way out toward the left field fence. It looks like it's going to be. Yes, it is, fans. It's a home run. And another case of Wheaties for hard-hitting Jimmy Fox. What a hit and what a ball player.
In the fall, his broadcast sounds something like this.
It's going to be a pass. His bell is fading back. And there goes the ball straight into Don Hutson's arms. Another touchdown pass for the Green Bay Packers.
In the wintertime, you'll hear him saying...
West Hayes in the center of the court. Paulson dribbles, passes to Hale. Hale to Johnson. Johnson passes to Tucker under the basket. Tucker shoots, and it's a basket. West Hayes leads North 6-5.
No matter what the season is, there's always a sport in the limelight. And that's the reason why so many fellows and girls follow Jack Armstrong's personal training rules the year round. They know that keeping in tip-top physical shape 365 days a year is mighty important in helping them become leaders in their favorite sports. Now, to refresh your memory, here are the famous Jack Armstrong training rules. First, get plenty of fresh air, sleep, and exercise. Second, use lots of soap and water, as cleanliness is mighty important to an athlete's condition. And third, eat a breakfast of champions every morning. Did you get that? Eat a breakfast of champions every morning. Just because a thermometer takes a nosedive is no reason why you should miss out on your Wheaties, milk, and fruit any morning. Not at all. Wheaties, made from choice whole wheat, are a good source of abundant food energy. The food fuel that helps keep you warm when the weather gets chilly. Yes, a breakfast of champions is a mighty swell training breakfast the whole year round. Ask Mother to get Wheaties right away. Then eat a breakfast of champions every morning. And now, Jack Armstrong, the all-American boy. Jack Armstrong, Billy, and the Filipino Michelle are climbing down a steep mountainside in the Philippines to reach Uncle Jim's car, which was carried over the cliff by a landslide. In the car is an important chart and a luminous ring, which Uncle Jim needs to recover some valuable lost uranium. But the unscrupulous adventurer, Dr. Shapato, also wants this uranium, and he has sent Blackbeard down the cliff to recover the chart and ring. Uncle Jim and Betty are waiting higher up in the mountain with a tribe of friendly Negritos who are holding Shapato and his accomplice Lazaro prisoners. And now, as Jack and Billy and Michelle carefully descend the steep mountainside, dislodging loose rocks as they do so, they're keeping a careful lookout for Blackbeard. Listen.
It's getting awfully steep now, Jack. Look at those rocks go bouncing down the cliff.
Be careful, Billy. Don't go bouncing down with them.
Oh, I'll be careful. Gosh, I wish I were barefooted like Michelle here.
My feet tough, Senor Billy. Your feet not tough yet.
My hands are getting pretty tough, Michelle, from hanging onto these bushes.
We'll be lucky if we have bushes to hang onto all the way, Billy.
Yeah, and we'll be lucky if another landslide doesn't start and carry us down to the car with it. Hey, Jack, this is getting steep. It almost makes me dizzy to look straight down into the valley below.
Don't look down when you feel dizzy, Billy. Look up. Look up to where we left Uncle Jim and Betty.
But gosh, all willikins, Jack. I've got to look down to see where I'm stepping.
Just look at the cliff, Billy. Don't look out into empty space.
You ought to be far enough down now to see the car, Jack.
I see it, Billy. But you keep your eyes on where you're stepping. We're going in the right direction.
Yeah, the dizziness is gone now, Jack. Jump on crickets. We're almost halfway down to the car, but I don't see any sign of Blackbeard. Do you?
Not a sign, Billy. Michelle, are you sure that Blackbeard was going to try to get down to the car? It's a mighty steep climb.
Me think Blackbeard go down to car. Señor Shapato say go. So, me think Blackbeard go.
A steep climb wouldn't bother Blackbeard, Jack. Not the way he can climb through the rigging of a boat.
He's probably getting down pretty close to the car now, Billy. There's so much bush growing up from this cliff, it'd be hard to see him.
He's got a head start of us, sure enough. If we don't hurry, he's going to get that chart and ring and get away before we even get down there.
He must have climbed down a different way. We'd have seen him if he'd gone down this way.
We see him. He almost down.
Where, Michelle? Where is he?
I see him too, Billy. He's to our left and about halfway between us and the car.
Then he'll get there long before us. He'll get the chart and the ring and we'll never catch him.
I don't know about that, Billy. There's a vertical cliff right downhill of him, I think. He'll have to cut over to the right and then go down. That'll take a little time.
But I still don't see... Oh, yes, I do. He's letting himself down the side of the mountain by some small trees.
Stop. He look up. He's looking back up, Billy. Stay still so he doesn't see us.
He doesn't see us, Jack. There. He's working his way down again. He doesn't know that we're after the chart and ring, too.
He's working over to the right. He's afraid to try that vertical cliff.
We've just got to go faster, Jack. He's going to get there way ahead of us.
Watch it, Billy. It's dangerous to go too fast. That stone you're slipping on doesn't look safe to me.
Oh, gosh! Jack, I'm slipping!
Hang on, Billy. Hang on to that bush.
I'm holding on, Jack, but the bush is pulling out.
Come on, Michelle. We've got to get a hold of Billy. Quick.
Hurry, Jack. The bush is breaking loose. I can feel it, Jim.
We'll be there in a second, Billy. Take your toes in. Atta boy, that takes some of the strain off the bush.
I'm sticking my toes in, Jack, but I can't get much of a foothold.
That's right, Michelle. Wrap one arm around that small tree and stretch your leg down to Billy. I can get there in half a jiffy.
Here, Señor Billy, you reach my leg.
I'll try. The bush is breaking.
Grab Michelle's leg, Billy. Atta boy. Now hold on to it. And you hold on to that tree, Michelle.
Me got hold tree.
And I've got your leg, Michelle. Can you hold on to that tree until Jack gets here?
Me hold tight. Hurry, Señor Jack.
I'll get right below you, Billy. Quite so steep there, and I can get braced against that small tree.
Don't, Jack. That's too dangerous. If I slide down on top of you, you'll lose your hold.
No, I won't. Here, this little tree is well-rooted. I've got a good brace. Now, let go and slide to me.
I'm afraid to, Jack. I'm afraid to for your sake. I'm afraid I'll knock you down the cliff.
That's our only chance, Billy. Michelle can't hold you forever, and we're wasting time. I won't get knocked down. Let go.
Okay. Here I come.
The tree held.
Oh.
You're all right now.
I wasn't so afraid for myself, Jack, but I was afraid for you. Oh, if it hadn't been for Michelle and you...
Forget it, Billy. Come on down, Michelle. We'll wait for you.
Me come. You brave person, Señor Jack.
Look, Jack. Blackbeard is looking back up now. He sees us. He must have heard me shout.
Now he knows that the chart and ring are in the car. He knows we're going after them.
He started down again, Jack. Look how fast he's going. We've just got to hurry.
Oh, no, we don't, Billy. Look what happened when you started to hurry before. We'll make haste slowly and safely.
Me come now. We go, huh?
Come on, Billy. But watch your steps.
Oh, watch every step this time, Jack.
We may have more time than we think. That sure doesn't know where the chart and ring are. And there's an awful lot of stuff piled in that car.
But, Jack, he's going to have lots of time to hunt. Why, he'll be there in just a moment.
The car's turned over on its back, Billy. Maybe the doors are jammed. Maybe he can't get in.
Nope. One of the front doors is open. I can see it from here.
Gosh, he can get in the front of the car. I'm afraid he can't. And that's where the chart and ring are, right in the glove compartment.
Maybe he get chart and ring. Then what he do? If he come back, we get him.
Jumping crickets, Michelle. You're right. We've got him trapped. He can't come back up without us getting him.
That's right, Billy. So what'll he do then?
Well, I guess he'll just keep on going down the mountain until he can get away.
That's what he'll do, unless he's prepared to fight.
Oh, not Blackbeard. He'd never try to fight the three of us.
Me hope he try. Me no like Blackbeard. He big bag full of wind.
That's just what he is, Michelle, a big bag full of wind. If he finds the chart and ring, he won't try to get back to Chipato and Lazaro right away. He'll try to shake us off by slipping down the mountainside.
Well, you can just bet your boots that we'll be right there after him.
The only thing I'm afraid of is that Chipato and Lazaro will come down and join him.
But the Negritos have captured Chipato and Lazaro.
Yes, but they may get away. Chipato has lots of nerve, and Lazaro is one clever hombre. Between the two of them, they may manage to get away and come down to join Blackbeard.
But then Uncle Jim will come down, too.
No, he's got Betty with him. He can't afford to take many chances.
But, Jim, on that age, Jack, we can catch Blackbeard and get the chart and ring away from him before Chipato and Lazaro can ever get to him.
That's what we'll have to do. Look, Blackbeard's down to that level spot where the car landed.
Yeah, he's looking back at us. He wants to see how much time he has.
He's not wasting any time. He's running to the car now.
Look, Jack, over here. The landslide made a regular trough in the side of the mountain. I bet you we could slide down that like lightning.
We'd slide down like lightning, all right, but maybe we couldn't stop. Maybe we'd go head over heels.
But look at Blackbeard. He's squeezing his big hawk into the car now. He'll have that chart and ring in a second, Jack. We can't let him get too far away with it.
Okay, Billy, we'll try it. Are you game, Michelle?
Me try. Me try anything with you, Senor Jack.
All right, I'll go first. Billy, you slide behind me and then Michelle.
We'll be right behind you, Jack. Hey, this is going to be fun.
We'll probably burn the seat out of our britches. We'll slide feet first. Keep your feet in the air when you slide down, Billy. If your foot got caught, you'd break a leg or tumble over on your neck. Here goes.
Whoa. Boy, oh boy. Freeman, human name slide. Are you coming, Michelle?
Me come pretty fast, Senor Billy. Me come faster than you. Look out.
Look out, Jack. We're overtaking you.
Hey there, what's the hurry?
I can't go any slower.
We'll end up in a heap together. Watch it. We're reaching the bottom.
Gee. Oh. I hope I didn't rip my trousers too much.
Never mind the clothes. Look at Blackbeard. He's getting out of the car.
He doesn't know which way to run.
Yes, he does. He's going on down the mountain.
Come on, Michelle. Let's go get him.
We'll stop by at the car first, Billy. Maybe he didn't get the chart and ring.
I'll soon find out. Wait a minute. I'll get in the car and look.
Keep an eye on Blackbeard, Michelle. Watch which way he goes.
Me watch, Senor Jack. Me see which way he goes.
They're gone, Jack. Blackbeard has them. He's got the chart and the ring.
Come on, Billy. We're going to get them from him.
Well, which way did he go, Jack? Did he go straight down?
Straight down, Billy. There, you can see him. Come on.
What? He's disappeared, Jack. I can't see Blackbeard anywhere.
He went over the edge of the cliff, Billy. That's why we can't see him. We'll be there in a second.
We're suffering catfish. It looks like another steep cliff.
No, it's not so steep. It goes right down to the creek bottom.
There's Blackbeard. Jumping Jiminy, but is he making time?
Look, Billy, he's slipping.
He's lost his footing, Jack. He's rolling over and over.
It's a good thing this hillside isn't any steeper. He'd break his neck,
sure. There. He's picked himself up. He's looking back at us, Jack.
He's off again. He's almost to the creek bottom. Come on, Billy. We don't want to lose sight of him. We'll have to slide down the way he did.
See you, Jack. You look this way. You see what me see?
Where, Michelle?
Up this way. You look up mountain.
What's up there, Michelle? We haven't time to stop and look at the scenery.
Senor Chipato up there. Lazaro up there. They start down.
Gosh, all fish hooks. Where, Michelle?
Up there, you see.
I see them, Billy. Right up where we came from. They've just started down the first cliff.
But how on earth?
It doesn't matter how they got away, Billy. We've got to get that chart and ring from Blackbeard before they get here. Come on. I'm going to slide down and go after Blackbeard.
Okay, Jack. We're right behind you.
Here we go.
Well, this isn't as bad as the last
Whoa,
one.
Oh, it's bad enough.
There won't be anything left of my clothes now.
Blackbeard's reached the bottom. Can you see him?
Well, I see him. He's ducking off to the right.
We'll be down there in a second.
We'll catch him then. He can't slide any further, and we can outrun him.
That's it, Billy. We're almost at the bottom.
There we are. Okay. Boy, was that a slide? Where'd he go to, Jack? I don't see him.
He went this way on this old foot trail. That's funny. I don't see him either.
But gosh, all willikins, we can see way down the trail and he's not in sight.
He's not in sight, Billy, but he's not far off. And we're going to find him before Chipato and Lazaro get here. Come on.
Say, where did Blackbeard disappear to? Did he just get swallowed up by the mountain? There must be something very surprising along that old foot trail. Jack and Billy and Michelle are going to have to do some fast thinking. And some quick acting, too, because Chipato and Lazaro are on the way down the mountainside now. There's some fast action ahead, and you won't want to miss it. So be sure to listen in, all of you, at this same time tomorrow for another exciting episode of The Country of the Headhunters with Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. Look, here's a little message I'd like to have you pass on to Mother. All ready for it? Well, I'd like to have you tell Mother that Wheaties give you every bit of the well-known essential nourishment of choice, natural whole wheat. Vitamins B1 and G, minerals, and fuel energy to help keep you warm. What's more, the Council on Foods of the American Medical Association has accepted Wheaties as a preferred breakfast cereal. Now, that's a mighty swell recommendation in anyone's language. So have Mother get you a supply of Wheaties from the grocer right away.
Have you tried Wheaties? They're whole wheat with all of the bran. Won't you try Wheaties?
This is Franklin McCormick saying goodbye until tomorrow for General Mills, makers of Wheaties, Breakfast of Champions, who have just presented another episode of Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy.
Best breakfast food in the land. Wave the flag for Hudson High, boys. Show them how we stand. Ever shall our team be champions.
Here's the next part of the interview with Dave Siegel and Randy Cox regarding their book on Casey Crime Photographer. The original title is Flash Gun Casey, the name of the book. Before we talk about the radio series in depth, have there ever been any attempts, from the mid-50s on, besides the amateur drama, to bring Casey back? Have you guys ever figured it out? Did anybody try to license the character and do something with it, later down the road?
I think George Harmon Cox tried very hard to get the TV magnates interested in producing TV featuring Casey. He had some other characters that Randy is more familiar with than I am that were also newspaper people and photographers. Randy, you can talk about that, but I don't think he was successful. He did his best. He was really an outstanding person in terms of the mystery field. He had been twice the Grand Master of the Mystery Writers of America, which is quite an honor for anybody in the mystery field.
Well, actually, he was twice president of the Mystery Writers of America and then once Grand Master. But who's counting? His other major character that people remember from the books is Kent Murdoch, who was also a photographer, and he appeared in some 20 novels. And a number of people have said that they told him once, people would tell George that they wish he had not created Kent Murdoch. He should have stayed with Casey and just done novels about Casey, because they felt Casey was a better character than Kent. But when George was writing the first novel for Alfred Knopf in 1934-35, he was very busy those years, because he was not only doing the first Caseys for Black Mask, but he was also beginning a career of writing books for writing novels for a prestigious company, Alfred A. Knopf. And in that first one, Murder with Pictures, published in 1935, he just decided that he needed somebody a little more sophisticated than Casey. And he said maybe that was a mistake. Maybe he should have stuck with Casey. But anyway, he went with Kent, and there was one television special or story with Kent Murdoch in it, but never a series. And there really was never any interest in doing movies after the 1930s. They probably killed the franchise with the three that were made, There were two Casey films, and then there was one based on George's first novel, Murder with Pictures, and none of them were really, you know, world beaters. Even George realized that, you know, he admitted that years later they were just B pictures. But as far as we know, nobody seriously has tried to either revive Casey in another medium or do films or television plays based on any of Cox's other works.
Okay, how in the world did the radio series come about, and was it always out of New York?
The radio series started in New York, started at CBS, and the reason it came about was that George Harmon Cox at that time was doing some work for CBS in terms of some of the scripts that they were doing during the war. There was a program called The Commandos, I think, that Robert Louis Cheyenne was involved with, and apparently some of the vice presidents at CBS secretly were reading Black Mask magazine as their own way of entertainment. As fans of Black Mask magazine, they spoke to George Harmon and asked him if he'd like to create a radio program based on Casey, who was a character that the vice presidents were fond of. George Harmon Cox agreed, sat down with one of the major writers for CBS. I think his name was, is that Ashley Buck?
That was Ashley Buck, yes.
Right. And the two of them came up with a kind of a an outline of what the Casey program should be like. Many of the characters in the and the background of the radio programs were a bit different from the pulp magazines. In the pulp magazines, it was also very clear that Casey wrote, or I'm sorry, that Casey worked for a Boston newspaper. The city was not specifically identified on the radio, but I think many people expected that it was New York because of the degree of characters who were in it. Anne Williams, for example, does not appear in the Casey short stories. Lieutenant Logan does. The Blue Note Cafe does not appear in the Casey short stories. That was a creation of George Harmon Cox, as was the great piano player who worked at the Blue Note, Herman Chittison. Randy, I'll let you up from there.
Yes, that's pretty much the way it got started, that George and Ashley Buck sort of batted around the idea and worked up an audition script. And George early on said that he would not write the script. He would help to get the format going, but he was not interested in writing any of the other scripts. And they came up with the Blue Knot Cafe as a good place to for the characters to congregate at the beginning and the ending of each episode. And actually, if you read the Casey stories in Black Mask, you'll discover there is, while there's no Blue Knot Cafe, there are occasionally bars that Casey goes to at the beginning of the story or at the end of a story. And you have a sense that George was trying to set up a kind of regular watering hole for his characters, many of which, you know, worked for a big, a major Boston newspaper, you know, who could get together at the end of the story or even at the beginning. Some of this came out of the play and movie, or the idea of it came out of the play and the movie, The Front Page, where you have a congregation of reporters getting together in a place like that. But, yeah, they wanted, as far as George was knew, this was the first time that anybody had named a cafe the Blue Note. It was named after a real cafe or bar called Le Ruban Bleu, and Herman Chittison was the a piano player that George was very fond of, and he thought that one of the things that that the Blue Knot Cafe needed on the radio show was a piano player playing in the background to set the tone for the story. And he thought that Herman was a terrific piano player, and he got him a regular job on the show. Occasionally, he would be allowed to say a few words on the microphone, and at that point, at least the episodes I've heard, he was referred to as Ernie, not Herman. But he was always identified on the show. And a lot of this must have really been successful, because if you ask people what they remember about Casey Crime Photographer, it's usually the Blue Note and Herman Chittison and Ethelbert the Bartender. Those are the unique parts of the series. The rest of the adventures may, you know, have slipped their mind, certainly after all these years, if they don't have recordings of them. But that's pretty much the way it got started.
Ethelbert always added a touch of humor. He had a strange, kind of a strange voice, played by John Gibson,
mm-hmm.
the entire run, I believe.
Yes, that's correct.
And Casey actually didn't start with a very famous actor, Scott Scottsworth, but started with Matt Crowley, went on to be played by
Jim Backus.
Jim Backus, and then finally Scott Scottsworth, who took over very early in 1943 and stayed with the program for the entire run.
I'm talking to David Siegel and Randy Cox. They have a brand new book called Flash Gun Casey. And once again, David, how can people get a copy of the book?
If they're online, they can order it through bookhunterpress.com/radio. If they want to write to us, they can write to us at Book Hunter Press, P.O. Box 193, Yorktown Heights, New York, 10598.
And the book is also available on Amazon.com, folks, or Barnes & Noble.
Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and also Radio Spirits. The book is available for, what's the price, Randy?
$18.95.
Plus $3.50 for mailing or shipping.
When did the radio series start? Did it start in 42, or did it start a little bit before then? Here's the Bing Crosby Show from January 2nd, 1952.
Sound off! Sound off for Chesterfield!
Oh, take the tip from Brother Bing, get on the ball, get in the swing by Chesterfield, the one for you, the smoke that gives you something new.
Mildness plus,
no aftertaste.
Mildness plus,
no aftertaste.
No unpleasant aftertaste in Chesterfield.
That's right!
Someone wait for me.
This is Ken Carpenter. Welcome you to the Bing Crosby Show for Chesterfield. Produced and transcribed in Hollywood with John Scott Trotter and his orchestra, Judd Collins of the Mayors and Bing's guests, Hopalong Cassidy and Monica Lewis. Ladies and gentlemen, and a special announcement to all of you folks listening who have an old 1951 model Bing Crosby, we suggest that you hurry right down to your dealers and turn it in on a new 1952 model. And now, being wheeled out on the showroom floor is the new Bing Crosby.
Inquire now about that introduction. Just what was your motive?
Well, I guess I had an automotive.
That's the way to start off the new year, Ken, with a crack-up on the takeoff.
Can't say I didn't try. Did you have a high old time New Year's Eve, Bing?
Oh, yes. No, really, I didn't. I couldn't. Yes, I said. I should have turned the page a little quicker and I read the right line.
Ask
me again, I'll give you a big
reaction. Bing, did you have a high old time on New Year's Eve?
No, Ken. I didn't get any further off the ground than you did with automotive.
You mean that you didn't champagne at Ciro's?
I didn't even milkshake at Macomba. I spent a very quiet evening. As a matter of fact, I was in bed at 10:30.
You mean to say you didn't celebrate at midnight with a noisemaker?
I might have been snoring a little. I don't know.
Mean that. What about a paper hat and confetti?
Very seldom throw confetti in bed, Ken. Not even on New Year's Eve.
A square.
I guess I'm just going to get around.
Going to bed so early, you missed all the fun. I still feel awful.
Congratulations. No, I had to hit the sack early, Ken, because I wanted to get up early and get to Pasadena to see the Tournament of Roses parade. What a mob.
Oh, wasn't there? Boy, but I was lucky. I found a parking spot right on Colorado Boulevard where the parade passed.
I did pretty good, too.
Oh, did you find a parking space near Colorado?
Mm-hmm. Denver. Quite a hike I had to the parade. I got a little weary going through Altadena.
Altadena? Where's that?
Well, don't you know Altadena?
Oh.
That's the checking station out there. They check your money there to see if you got enough to come into Pasadena.
Did you get into Pasadena?
Oh, yes, I made it. I had an official badge. You see, Minute Maid fresh frozen orange juice had a float in the parade.
Oh, yes. Oh, and say, that Minute Maid float, that was really impressive.
Wasn't that epic?
Symbolizing world peace. It was really something with that big rainbow flowers.
Oh, yes, and how about that big dove of peace done in white mums with the olive branch in its beak mounted on the crest of a rainbow.
Oh, that dove was terrific. And its wings moved slowly up and down as if in flight.
Yeah, I know. Boy, are my arms tired.
Your arms should be tired. That was a long parade.
Oh, I didn't mind that so much, but after the parade, I flew over the Rose Bowl to watch the game, you know.
Ben, getting back to the Rose Parade, did you notice that Chesterfield was well represented there, too?
Give and take.
Gotta do it.
Thinking of the other sponsor. Well, yes, all along the line of march, I noticed that people were puffing away at those milder Chesterfields.
And being perched up there on the rainbow, as you were, you could qualify as an official observer.
Absolutely. Now, Ken, I think we'd better get to the opening number, huh?
Yeah.
It's a new sort of wintry song entitled Sleigh Ride. John Scott, let's hit the snow here, huh?
Hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring, ting, tingling too. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Outside the snow is falling and friends are calling you. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you.
Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, let's go.
Let's look at the show.
Riding in a wonderland of snow. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, it's grand.
Just holding your hand.
Ooh, we're gliding along with a song of a wintry fairyland.
Our cheeks are nice and rosy and comfy cozy are we. We're snuggled up together like two birds of a feather would be.
Let's take that road before us and sing a chorus or two. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. There's a birthday party at the home of Farmer Gray. It'll be the perfect ending of a perfect day. We'll be singing the songs we love to sing without a single stop.
At the fireplace where we watch the chestnuts pop,
pop, pop, pop.
There's a happy feeling nothing in the world can buy. When they pass around the coffee and the pumpkin pie,
it'll nearly be like a picture print by Currier and I. These wonderful things are the things we remember all through our lives.
Just hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring, ting, jingling too. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you.
Let's take that road before us and sing a chorus or two.
Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you.
Ooh, ooh there now.
Ready, easy,
ooh. Everybody out.
Jing, jing, jing.
Yeah. Say, folks, next time you're out of smokes, latch on to a pack of Chesterfields. Get smoking pleasure all the way with that Chesterfield mildness, plus no unpleasant aftertaste. Remember, over 1,500 tobacco growers tell you Chesterfield's delightful aroma means Chesterfield's smoke milder. You smoke a pack and see for yourself. They're milder with no unpleasant aftertaste.
One of the world's most famous industrial research organizations reports, of all brands smoked and examined, Chesterfield is the only cigarette in which members of the panel found no unpleasant aftertaste.
Chesterfield mildness plus no unpleasant aftertaste. Only Chesterfield has it. Try them today. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like now to present, I'd like to have you meet, rather, a charming young actress who comes to us through the courtesy of the MGM Studios. Very fine singer who has just recently returned from Korea, where she entertained our troops with Danny Kaye. Miss Monica Lewis.
Thanks, Bing.
Monica, I bet that's quite a trip you had over there to Korea, huh?
Well, it was quite an experience, Bing.
Exciting, huh?
Oh, yeah. We took off from California and we landed in Korea and it was freezing cold.
I bet you thought you was back in California.
Well, it wasn't that cold.
I bet those fellas over there were glad to see you, huh?
Oh, they were. But I'm certainly glad I got to go over there when I did. It was sort of like giving the boys an advanced Christmas show.
Well, you certainly made a nice Santa, Monica.
Thanks,
La Brea.
May I say you make a wonderful dove.
Oh, you saw me on the float, huh?
Oh, yeah, but the way you were flapping your wings there, I'm surprised you didn't take off.
Oh, they had me grounded. They had my feet wired to the rainbow. I couldn't... What are you going to sing for us tonight, Monica?
Well, I thought I'd like to do George and Ira Gershwin's Wonderful Smile.
Wonderful Smile. Oh, that's a beauty. Take over, Monica. Coming our way is a man who has grown to be a symbol of clean living and fair play in this country. I guess this fellow spent more time in your living room than most of your relatives. You've seen him on television, and now we present him on the new up-and-coming medium, radio. Folks, here's Hopalong Cassidy.
Hello, Bing. Happy New Year.
And the same to you, Bill. Look, now, right at the outset here, before we go any further, I want to ask you something. I want the truth now. So far, how many corny guys have come up to you and said, Happy New Year?
You're the first.
I'm a card, ain't I? I'm just right on my... I'm glad we're not on television. I'd be blushing madly here.
By the way, Bing, when are you going on television?
Oh, television's going to blow over, Hoppy.
How wishful can a guy think?
Oh, you mean you think television is set, huh?
Why, of course. Even President Truman makes his speeches on TV. You better get in. Competition's getting pretty tough.
It could be, but I don't think the president and I are competing anyway.
I don't know about that. I saw a picture of him down at Key West, and he's even starting to dress like you.
I know what you mean, those shirts, huh? Well, you see, Bill, President Truman has a reason for wearing his shirt out.
What is it?
Well, I hear he's got an Eisenhower button holding up his pants. Getting back to television here now for a minute, I think I'll hold out for a little while longer as far as that medium is concerned. I've heard from some sources I don't even look good on the radio, so I'm away from television.
Well, if you don't want to do a live TV show, why don't you show some of your old pictures?
Well, that's an idea. You've done all right that way. How's it feel? Yeah. How's it feel making money off something that happened 20 years ago?
Well, you ought to know. Gary's doing all right.
only 18 years ago.
Right.
No kidding. I have to hand it to you. You certainly got my deepest admiration, Bill, the way you won the admiration and the affection of the Sprout set. Almost every kid you see is wearing hoppy guns, hoppy shirts, hoppy boots.
Yeah, and the latest thing I've got out now is hoppy underwear.
This boy really gets close to the public, doesn't he?
Yes, sir.
You know, the ambition of every kid, I believe, is to look just exactly like you. I'll bet they even wish they had silver gray hair like yours.
Oh, no, Bing, I don't think so.
Oh, I bet they do. I bet you could sell the kids little gray toupees. Call it hoppy hair.
Are you on the level, Bing?
I'm dead serious, Bill. First you sell the kids hoppy hair, then hoppy combs. 6 months later, you hit the market with hoppy dandruff remover.
Well, that's a thought, Bing, that I don't know. Do you think little children would look good with gray hair?
I think they'd look terrific. I can just see it now. Every kid on the block looked like a Supreme Court justice. This may be one of the best ideas I ever had. Why, they can play cowboys and Indians, have painless scalpings.
Yeah, but I like to please my public. Supposing a lot of kids bought hoppy hair and they didn't like it when they got it.
Can you come out with Hoppy's henna rinse?
Henna rinse?
Sure, for 5-year-olds who want to look free.
You sold me, Bing. I'll go right into production.
Ah, you're on. We better get into production here, too. Hoppy, with you on the show tonight, I'll bet every kid listening is just waiting for Hoppy to go into a rip-snorting, old-fashioned Western dreamer, huh?
I'm ready.
Well, we got Monica Lewis all set here. She's going to play the leading lady, so we better head for the old West. John Scott, put us in the mood, huh?
Our story takes place in the little western town of Torn Pants, Nevada, which is right across the river from Arizona. This is the old wild and woolly west, where men are men and women are women, which makes the barn dances a heck of a lot more fun. The action takes place in the schoolhouse, where the schoolmarm, Susie Bell Lewis, is being paid a visit by Two-Gun Crosby, a low-down, contemptible, conniving, no-good, underhanded... sneaky, cutthroat, and horse-thieving, miserable buzzard.
I was a dove in the Rose Parade.
The scene opens as that ex-dove, Two-Gun Crosby, rides into town. Yes!
Whoa there, old paint now, whoa. Hey, doggone you, pull up now. Whoa!
I gotta stop hitching this nag in front of Arthur Murdy's. Howdy, ma'am.
How dare you ride your horse into my schoolhouse? Get him out of here this instant.
But this is old paint.
I don't care. Get him out.
But, ma'am, you can't ask me to give old paint to Buzz.
Oh, This is terrible. Who are you, anyway?
Everybody knows me. I'm Two-Gun Crosby, they call me. Got a dipper of water, ma'am? I'm thirsty. I've been riding the trail all day. Got dust on my tonsils.
I know. I heard you sing.
Now, don't get sassy, gal. Don't get sassy, me. You better pack your duds and get out of here, because I'm taking over this schoolhouse. I'm turning into a gambling casino.
But what about my pupils?
Mighty nice. The rest of your eyes ain't bad either.
I was referring to my students.
Oh, yes. By the way, where is your class?
Here I am.
John Scott, I didn't hear you.
I just tippy-toed in.
Well, you can just tippy-toe out, too.
Oh, hello, Two-Gun. Hello, Two-Gun.
What'd you say?
Hello, Two-Gun.
Hello, Two-Ton. Are you the whole class?
I guess so. I takes up all the seats.
Now, listen to me, school ma'am. I want you and Two-Ton off these premises by sundown. Clean everything out of here. Leave them erasers on the blackboard, though. I may want to rub somebody out here.
Oh, this is terrible. Everybody in town's afraid of Two-Gun. There's no one to help me. Oh, why isn't Hopalong Cassidy, the brave television star, here?
At your service, ma'am. I'm Hopalong Cassidy.
But you got white streaks running across you, and you're all blurred.
Turn my nose, ma'am. I ain't poking.
But I can't believe you're Hopalong. You're wearing a gray derby and a checkered waistcoat, plaid knickerbockers, and you're carrying a cane.
This is a disguise.
Now, where did you ever find a get-up like that?
I got it at Orbox. This is my Douglas Fairbanks Jr. outfit.
I'm so glad you're here, Hopalong. Two Gun Crosby is going to turn my schoolhouse into a gambling casino, and he'll be back here any minute.
Good. I'll be waiting for him with nary a discouraging word. Don't fence me in. Smile when you say that stranger. Get along, little doggy. And they went that away.
Say, that's real authentic cowboy talk.
Well, it should be, ma'am. I heard it on the Spade Cooley Show.
I'm so afraid of Two Gun. Look out the window. Here he comes now.
Now, when Two Gun comes in, ma'am, don't you be afraid. You just stand behind me and don't let on that I'm Hopalong Cassidy.
Oh, Hopalong, I'm so glad you're here. I could kiss you.
I don't know about that, ma'am.
Oh, come on.
But, ma'am...
Shall I tippy toe out?
Heavens no, you stay right here. Now, remember, don't let on that I'm Hopalong.
Everybody clear out. Now, remember... I'm Two Gun Crosby. They call me Bing, Bing, Bang. Bang, Bang, Bing. Bing, Bang.
I say there, old chappy, you possess a permit to carry those weapons.
Oh, ho, ho. Get a load of the dude here.
I'll thank you not to make disparaging remarks about my clothing. And incidentally, what sort of attire are you wearing?
This is a Western outfit, Leroy. So happens I'm a cowboy.
Oh, I say, yippee, another Western expression. This is bully. I've seen you cowboy chaps in the cinema, and I've always wanted to ask a question. Why is it you never kissed the girl?
Listen, partner, after you live with a horse, sleep with a horse, and eat with a horse, just try to get a girl to kiss you.
How quaint. I don't wish to be crude, but if you tell another joke like that, we shall have to engage in fisticuffs.
Oh, will I roust this sissy around in a minute? Oh. Now, look here, Fanny Waste. I'm here to turn this schoolhouse into a gambling casino, so all you clear out of here. Go on, school's out.
I say, ruffian, your childish display of bravery doesn't impress me at all.
Oh, wait till I get through with this fellow.
I advise you to leave immediately.
Oh, yeah? I'm going to make shambles of this schoolhouse. I'm going to do it right now.
Well, if you do, you're going to reckon with Hopalong Cassidy.
Hopalong Cassidy? Are you Hopalong?
Look out, Hoppy. He's reaching for his gun.
Just a minute. Hold everything, Two Gun. We'll settle this according to the code of the West. The schoolmom here will count to three. And then we'll both draw.
That's okay by me. Count to three, ma'am.
Okay. One, two.
He got me.
Why, Hoppy, you...
I gotta come to school tomorrow, ma'am. I must brush up on my counting.
You know, Hoppy asked me to, sing a favorite Western song of his tonight.
It's a right good one, too. Johnny?
Ah, there's silver on the sage tonight, sprinkled by the moon above. So lie down, doggie, and let me dream of the one girl I love. There's silver on the sage tonight. We've been on the trail all day. So lie down, doggie, and you dream too of a range far away, of a range waiting for you, where the streams never go dry and the grass sparkles with dewdrops in the meadows of the sweet by and by. There's silver on the sage tonight, sprinkled by the moon above. So lie down, doggies, and let me dream of the one I love, of the girl I love.
Monica, why don't you sashay over here for a minute and let's do a little sounding off. You all set? Take it away, John Scott.
Friends, in 1952, we got something special we want you to do. Try the smoke that sets the pace with no unpleasant aftertaste. Mildness plus.
No aftertaste.
Mildness plus.
No aftertaste.
No unpleasant aftertaste in Chesterfield.
That's right.
Yes, Chesterfield's the smoke for you. The milder, better taste too. Try a pack or a carton a day. Get smoke and pleasure all the way.
And sound off.
For Chesterfield.
Sound off.
For Chesterfield.
Try a pack of Chesterfields and do it.
Today.
No kidding, folks. The only reason we make that pitch is to get you to try Chesterfields. You'll find they're milder, just the way you want them, and after smoking, Chesterfields leave no unpleasant aftertaste. So sound off for Chesterfields. Start the new year off with a carton.
A clouded moon creeps across a clouded sky. Winds of January sigh and moan. And yet it's June, I can see a sky of blue. Dear, the miracle is due to you. Just you, it's June in January, because I'm in love. It always is spring in my heart, with you in my arms. The snow is just white blossoms that fall from above. And here is the reason, my dear, your magical charms. The night is cold, the trees are bare, but I can feel the scent of roses in the air. It's June in January, because I'm in love, but only because I'm in love with you. I'm so in love with you.
Thank you. Thank you, and that's that is the finish of our little Rotemontade here tonight. Now my thanks to Monica Lewis and to Hopalong Cassidy for joining us this evening.
I enjoyed it, Bing.
So did I, Bing.
Say, I forgot to tell you, Hoppy, you were a real flash riding on Topper in the Rose Parade, Hoppy.
You were real flashy yourself, Duffy.
Duffy. Well, I guess every bird gets the bird now and then. See you soon, Bill. Friends, no man ever stands so straight as when he stoops to help a child. This is the slogan of the Big Brothers of America. Boys from broken homes, boys who are truants, who run with gangs, and boys who are sliding into delinquency, they can be straightened out, you know. The Big Brothers guide these boys to an honorable manhood. The Big Brother is a volunteer who works under the direction of a trained social worker. The core of the Big Brother movement is one man and one boy.
Big Brother associations in the United States and Canada have proved since 1904 that no philosophy has been more effective in the prevention of juvenile delinquency. This great work, of course, cannot continue without a little help. A little help from you. More Big Brothers are needed. More Big Brother organizations are needed. Your support is needed. Write Big Brothers of America, Philadelphia 3, Pennsylvania. I'll see you next week, folks. Meanwhile, drop in on your dealer, pick up a carton or two of Chesterfields. Sound off for Chesterfields and do it today.
The Bing Crosby Show, presented by Chesterfield, was produced and transcribed in Hollywood by Bill Morrow and Myrtle McKenzie. Tune in next week and hear Bing and his guests, Louis Armstrong and Martha Tilton. Miss Monica Lewis appeared through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of Westward the Women, starring Robert Taylor and Denise Darcel.
That was the Bing Crosby Show from January 2nd, 1952. I'm Walter Hughes, and may the good Lord Jesus Christ bless you. And this is Yesterday, USA.